Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Awful Announcing Podcast, presented by Clip It, the number one way to share your favorite clips with all the people in your life. Sharing has never been easier and more accessible thanks to Clip It. You can download it today on iOS and on Android. Ben Heisler with you. It's an end of July roundtable edition coming up in moments. We'll dive into baseball's latest issues, both in its product itself along with its social media concerns. Bill Simmons just got a new contract at HBO. We'll discuss what his future would look like. And could an ESPN movie be in the works with James Franco attached? Andrew Buchholz will join me, and we'll have Matt Yoder stop by a bit later on in the show as well. But before we get to them, it's time to play our Awful Announcing Guess It game presented by Clip It, where listeners of the Awful Announcing podcast and followers of us on Twitter get a chance to test their sports media knowledge for a chance to win $50 to Amazon.com. And today, Joe in Missouri is with us. Joe, good to talk to you, man. How you doing?
Good, Ben. How you been doing?
I'm great. Have you ever played this game before?
I have not played this game before.
Okay, well, good. That was able to catch you in case you were an imposter. So for those that don't know how to play, I have two clips, Joe, that I am going to play for you that you need to identify. If you get one right, you get $25 to Amazon. If you get both right, that becomes $50. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay, the first one is I need you to know and tell me which Fox MLB reporter did this interview, and then moments after the interview aired, he then tweeted that Manny Machado, the all-star shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles, had just gotten traded. I need you to tell me the name of this reporter.
Manny, every indication that you're getting traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers, what was your day like knowing this could happen?
You know what, just trying not to think about it, honestly. Just trying to enjoy this moment, come out here, enjoy with the American League guys, and just enjoy with all these guys that I've played with for a long time.
What about the fact that this is probably the last time you're going to wear this uniform? What are the emotions like?
Amazing.
All right, Joe, can you tell me which reporter on Fox's coverage of the All-Star game talked to Manny Machado and then moments later told him and told the world that he was being traded? What was his name?
I'm going to go with the man of 1,000 bow ties and Ken Rosenthal.
Ken Rosenthal is correct. Nicely done. $25 to Amazon.com is yours. One down, one to go, Joe. This was from a TBT basketball game coverage on ESPN. And I want you to tell me which ESPN basketball analyst and radio host made this random announcement over the weekend while announcing the game. Take a listen.
Can I make an announcement here? I have a racehorse, and he won his first race today. Smoke and Watch Stopper.
Win, huh?
Yeah, we
That's
did.
Good. And that is relevant to this broadcast, how?
It, because we donate money to the V Foundation, so we're giving $540 of our winnings
it's
to the V
race,
Foundation.
Huh?
It wasn't exactly the Derby, but it was at Arlington Park in Chicago.
All right, Joe, this is a ESPN college basketball analyst that's never shied away from stories or opinions. My question is, can you name him?
Ooh, basketball in a weak spot. I'm going to go with Bill Walton.
It was not Bill Walton. No, unfortunately, the correct answer was Dan Dockich, who's also the host at 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis. But one of two ain't bad. $25 to Amazon.com is yours. Joe, thank you for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast and for playing in our Guess It game presented by Clip It. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's now time for our roundtable portion of the Awful Announcing Podcast, and Andrew Buchholz, the outstanding writer over at Awful Announcing, has joined us today. So I guess it's not necessarily a roundtable, it's more of a face-to-face, but it's good to have you back on, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Ben. Thanks a lot for having me.
Always good to talk to you, and it's been since the World Cup that we had a chance to have a conversation, and as the World Cup started to move out of the conversation, Major League Baseball got a part of the conversation, obviously on the heels of the MLB trade deadline, but it almost feels like it took some issues and some bad tweets to put Major League Baseball in the conversation when they're the only sport on. And I'm wondering, Andrew, if you feel like Major League Baseball is starting to recognize that maybe there could be a problem on their hands and a problem that they need to deal with very soon.
Yeah, it's funny, because there's a lot of great things going on in baseball, but a lot of the time it feels like they're getting in their own way. And a real example of that was around the All-Star game break, where they created their own controversy about Rob Manfred saying that Mike Trout doesn't do enough for Major League Baseball to be able to promote him. That led to the Angels tweeting in support of Mike Trout. It led to a whole ton of controversy, and then it led to ESPN weirdly asking Trout for a weather update on a game across the country from him that he had no connection to whatsoever. And I mean, that just sort of shows you a lot of Major League Baseball at the moment. I mean, they've got all these great players, they have all these great storylines, and yet the things they wind up in the news for are incredibly stupid, like Braves broadcaster Joe Simpson just absolutely going off on the Dodgers for the crime of daring to wear t-shirts and shorts to batting practice. The various things with players' old tweets that get dug up, and the teams not really, in a lot of cases, it's not just even been that there have been bad old tweets, but teams have not handled the response to it well, and a lot of the apologies have been non-apologies. And it seems like baseball has a lot of things going for it. It's got a lot of great players, it's got great teams, it's got interesting storylines, but a lot of the people who are in prominent positions, whether those are veterans in the clubhouse or whether those are old school broadcasters or even in some cases the commissioner, they seem to be finding ways to really trip over themselves and make far from best headlines.
Do you feel like this is something that they plan to address? I get what Rob Manfred initially was saying, that he wanted his players to market themselves the way in which a lot of the NBA players market themselves. And it's become sort of a league within a league, and there's storylines and there's drama, and you have kind of the soap opera nature. A lot of baseball players just aren't like that. And I think you're right. It has to sort of come from within, the idea of getting this persona and the idea of not being able to celebrate home runs. So much of this machismo that exists in baseball, once it starts being policed out from the front end, I think that's when you're going to start to see a lot more of a difference. And I think it'll become a little bit more naturally organic, as opposed to saying, this is what we plan on doing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's really the key point there, is it's got to be naturally organic. Like, you can't say, oh, well, Mike Trout should be LeBron James. Mike Trout should be an outspoken social activist. Mike Trout should be involved in all these things because that's what LeBron cares about. Mike Trout should care about what Mike Trout cares about. And I mean, honestly, although the weather stuff sort of played out at this point, like, it's funny that that's what he cares about. That's what people want to spotlight him for, and whatever, that's great. And then I think even a lot of the bigger issues aren't even with Trout. They're with some of the other players, and we see it every time that there's people going nuts over, oh, how dare they flip their bat, or how dare they shift on this guy, or whatever, right? And there's this whole just over-the-top policing of the game and what the game should be, and you get things like Bud Norris harassing his teammates and being like, well, this is what happened to me, and I should pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's dumb. It's slowing down progression to what their younger fans want, right? And that's ultimately what baseball needs most. What's the average demo audience right now for baseball? It's like white guys in their 50s?
Yeah, it's not good. And a lot of the demographic studies over the years have shown that baseball is one of the sports with one of the bigger issues there, with an aging an audience in general. It's a sport that hasn't had as much success in connecting with a lot of younger people. And some of that is changing. I mean, MLB has made some positive strides on improving the local in-market streaming of their games. There's still a lot of hurdles to be cleared there, but they've done some good things there. MLB AM has done a lot of positive things. I mean, there's a reason that Disney went out and bought BAMTech, because they were an industry leader in a lot of this stuff. And MLB does a lot of things well, from hiring a lot of writers for their site, writing about interesting moments, producing shareable GIFs and videos and so on. I mean, those are all good things, but they, in a lot of ways, they need to get out of their own way, and they really need to get rid of this idea of, oh, well, the old white guys need to police the game the way they always have.
Yeah, I think that comes standard, especially if you're a younger fan. And there's still going to be a local connection. I think baseball has embraced the fact that from a localized market, a lot of the television numbers and radio numbers continue to do very well. But until you're able to realize the trend is not in your favor and work from a national level to put, and again, it might just be a long season and it's an everyday thing, and people just might have a little bit of fatigue from baseball too. But when the national spotlight is on you and you alone, man, I get the fact that summer league basketball can be fun, and NBA free agency, especially nowadays, has been fascinating. But you're the only live sport on, with the exception of golf and NASCAR and a couple weeks of the World Cup. This is a golden moment, and I think they need to figure out a way. Like if I were to ask you, what will be the likely story of the month of July? I mean, are we going to say that it's Tiger Woods possibly making a return at the Open Championship? Is it going to be the World Cup, or is it going to be NBA free agency? And I think the answer unequivocally is NBA free agency leading into the intrigue of the Summer League, which is remarkable.
Yeah, it really is impressive the way that the NBA has been able to dominate the news cycle year round, not just when they're playing. And I think a lot of that has to do with the league embracing its players' personalities. I mean, you don't see NBA players being called out for doing things the wrong way or not sticking to sports or whatever. I mean, Right. Sure, there are some people on Twitter who yell at them about it, but by and large, NBA fans really embrace that their superstar athletes are big personalities. And that's something that has helped them become something that people care about year round. Now, I mean, I don't think you can just tell baseball, oh, okay, become the NBA. It's not going to work that way, especially because the NBA has such, it's got smaller rosters. It's got a league where free agency can make so much more of a difference, where players really do have more power and so on. But I think MLB could learn a few things from the NBA embracing its different personalities and not trying to sort of force them into a mold and allowing its superstar players to speak out about what they care about.
Speaking of the NBA, with regards to the offseason and the complete amount of focus that us as fans, part of the media, have put on the NBA, even in its offseason, the news that both Shams and Chris Hayes, they're both free agents, and Woj moving to ESPN was a big deal for them. Is ESPN looking at the NBA in more so of a, we have to be front and central, be the newsbreakers of not just the NFL and the NBA? Do you think they might go ahead and really make a move on these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think breaking NBA news has become absolutely critical for ESPN. And that's why they went out and they got Woj, who is far and away the leader in this. And it's something that has a whole lot of benefits for ESPN. Like the initial clicks on their ESPN.com story or whatever are fine, but a big part of the reason they do it is so they can run on the ticker as reported by ESPN. And so that their studio shows can discuss these moves as reported by ESPN.
Right, because now they have to. Now they have to say reported by so-and-so.
Right, they're not citing it as reported by Yahoo or as reported by whoever, right? And so, I mean, that certainly gives them a lot of incentive to invest in newsmakers. Now, with them already having Woj, it becomes a question of who else do you invest in around him. Chris Haynes has done very well for them. I could certainly see them bringing him back. I could certainly see them adding Shams if it makes sense. He's a guy who's already worked well with Woj, obviously over at Yahoo. And I mean, I think NBA news breaking is an area they want to be invested in. It's just a question of to the degree they want to invest in it. I don't think they need to have every single newsbreaker in space, especially as they already have
right.
the leader of the pack and Woj. But I think there's a good chance they get one or the other of those two guys. Either they keep Chris Haynes or they go out and get Shams or whatever. And they will continue to invest in newsbreakers around Woj.
Well, let me throw a hypothetical situation at you, because we're seeing continued growth in the NBA. The NFL still remains king, but I think there's an argument to be made that it's less of a product and an environment as far as just demand than we've seen in years past. So let's say, hypothetical situation, ESPN management has both the contract of Woj and Adam Schefter up at the same time, and they can only keep one. Who do you think they would keep and why?
Yeah, that's an interesting hypothetical. And I mean, I would be tempted to say Woj, just because...
I think I would too.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, I mean, they're both. It's interesting because they both do largely the same thing.
Correct.
They're both sort of the foremost transactional guy in their field.
Right.
But I feel like the average NBA transaction has a lot more news value than the average NFL transaction. There are some NFL transactions that absolutely move the needle that will be discussed on ESPN studio shows for days and days. But I think there are more NBA transactions that meet those requirements because of the superstars in the league and because of the ways the superstars move around. And I mean, I don't think it's a hypothetical that will translate into a real thing. I think the high probability is that ESPN keeps both of those guys because they recognize both of their value. But I feel like having Woj is a huge thing for ESPN, and just being able to even just for the ticker or for SportsCenter, being able to say, hey, our guy broke this move. We are dialed in on this. We're the place that you want to go for this NBA news. And I think some of that translates to the fan base, too. I mean, we talked about demographics earlier with MLB. The NFL is another sport where the fan base is significantly older than
right.
the NBA. And is less engaged than the NBA. And if you like, even if you look at Twitter conversation, like there's so many people dissecting any very far down NBA trade or signing or whatever, right? And I don't think you get that entirely for the NFL, at least not on the same sort of national level.
Right.
The NFL, you have a lot of people who are very concerned about their team and what their team does. But I feel like NBA fans are so plugged in and are so interested in whatever moves are happening across the league. And so I think that gives ESPN a whole lot of value out of having a guy like Woj who's going to break those moves.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And I think if ESPN had to decide between one of the two of them, I think they would go with Woj as well. Because if you think about it, the NFL and the NBA, when it comes to their top level reporters, the NFL, even though Schefter's the number one guy, it's still fairly spread out. You have
right.
Ian Rappaport,
yeah.
and you have Mike Florio, mm-hmm. and Jason LaCanfora, and Jay Glazer. At the NBA, it's kind of Woj and Shams and maybe a couple others sprinkled in, but those are the two heavy hitters, and it's very more top-heavy in the NBA than in the NFL. I think you're right, too, the idea that you know there's more of a local focus on the NFL teams versus a national perspective in the NBA. To me, it's kind of remarkable to think that with the growth of the NBA, and the other part too is ESPN ABC has those exclusive rights in the
uh-huh.
Friday night and the Sunday afternoon, Saturday night, and of course leading up to the finals as well. So that's another investment into the product that you already have. So I think you're spot on from that. Let's move on to a guy that loves the NBA, but is now with HBO, formerly with ESPN, and that's Bill Simmons. Re-up with a new contract. His initial television show didn't work out, but the podcast is still going strong for him. The Ringer is still doing quite well. Are you surprised that they decided to bring Simmons back, or is it basically, man, if he hits on something, he has a chance to hit it big?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a move that more than anything else is about the documentaries. I think they saw how well the Andre the Giant documentary worked. And to be clear, that wasn't entirely a Bill Simmons thing. It was Bill Simmons in conjunction with HBO Sports and in conjunction with WWE. But I think HBO saw, okay, this can really work. And if we can hit on a couple more things like that, then this guy is absolutely worthwhile for us to have around. And I think it's interesting in that a lot of the discussion about Bill Simmons is about Bill Simmons as like front-facing media personality, what he was like on NBA Countdown, what he was like on Any Given Wednesday, what he's like on his podcast. But I think maybe the more substantial impact he's actually had in media is as a behind-the-scenes guy, when it's with Grantland, when it's with The Ringer, when it's with 30 for 30, and now with HBO and this Andre the Giant doc. And I think in a lot of ways, he's a guy who's better in that behind-the-scenes role. He's a guy who's better as an idea guy. He's a guy who's better as working on these documentaries and not necessarily being the talking head on the documentaries. And I think HBO may be a logical place for him to stick around, especially with them showing signs of being more into these documentaries, and with ESPN maybe dialing down a bit from what they've done over the last few years. I mean, everybody is in the sports spaces doing documentaries now, so you have to have a way to make them stand out. But maybe having Bill Simmons on board is a way to do that.
I think it's twofold with Simmons. Did you get a chance to listen to James Andrew Miller's podcast on ESPN?
Yeah.
For Origins? For sure. Okay. So there was a two-part series as part of the Origins series focusing on 30 for 30, and Simmons was an integral part of that. And one of the things that he talked about was, at the time, when 30 for 30 was just getting started, that HBO thought they owned the world in the documentary sports space, right? Like, this was HBO, and this is how HBO documentaries are done. And Simmons basically said, screw that. We have a plan to move it forward. And so I find it a little bit interesting that now he's back at HBO, now he's back working on the documentary side, and he can now take from the good of HBO, the better from 30 for 30, and really focus on turning a lot of these projects into exceptional projects from people and the surrounding environments that he's had where they've already had really good documentaries. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I think this works if Simmons is willing to put his ego aside and accept the idea of not being as much of an on-camera personality. And as somebody who has worked in the on-camera side and as a radio host, it's a very difficult thing to do once you've been in front of the camera to now take a step back and sort of focus everything and not necessarily become the center of attention, which Simmons, for as talented as he is, I think he enjoyed having a lot of the spotlight on him. Do you think that's something that he can maintain throughout the remainder of this deal?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think that something that's interesting with this and with where Simmons currently is at is that it's not like every day he's clocking in and working 9 to 5 for HBO. A lot of his work is going to be for The Ringer and for the podcast he does there, for his overall running of their operations and so on. And while HBO is the initial investor there or whatever, and that's not particularly tied to what he's doing for them. And so I think this deal could work out well in a lot of ways. I think it allows HBO to use Simmons where he is a really good fit, which is from this creativity standpoint, from especially with the documentaries, from finding ways to make those documentaries stand out in a crowded field. And but they don't, it's not like he has this weekly TV show anymore and they need to find ways to get him on camera every week and give him something to say every week. I think in a lot of ways it works better to have this arrangement where you can be, oh, okay, here's Bill, we'll bring him in when we need him versus we've got him all the time.
Matt Yoder now joining us on the Awful Announcing Podcast. Matt, we were just talking about Bill Simmons and the idea of whether or not he can be okay with the concept of being more of a behind-the-scenes personality in his work with the documentaries. Do you think that's something that he can hold on to and not feel like he has to be a part of the spotlight constantly? Do you think this can work out for him now that he signed this new deal?
I would like to say yes, but don't you guys think HBO can get a lot more out of Bill Simmons? I mean, we have what we have. The Andre the Giant documentary, which was great, which I loved, which was fantastic. but aren't you looking for a little bit more? And we had the HBO show, which kind of bombed out pretty quickly. I don't know if Simmons's podcast, if his columns carry the same weight that they once did. It just, he's in such a weird spot right now, and I wonder if he is now the poster child for seeing someone's influence wane once they leave ESPN. Because thinking about Bill Simmons and this behind the scenes role at HBO, considering he was the face of 30 for 30, he did have the BS report, he had Page Two, he had Grantland, he had all of these things at ESPN. That's quite the fall, isn't it?
Andrew, do you agree with that? Because I still look at Simmons as not necessarily a newsmaker, but still a prominent personality, especially in the podcast space. And I think his name is still synonymous with a lot of these 30 for 30 documentaries, regardless of whether he's a part of them currently or not. I don't know if I see it that way, Matt. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting with Simmons. I think his stock is not as high as it was a couple of years ago when he
left. That we can agree with, yes.
And, yeah, he left ESPN and there was this bidding war for him, and HBO came in and Yahoo came in, and all these properties are like, we'll get Bill Simmons. That will make us the face of sports streaming media or whatever. I don't think that's the case anymore, but I do think he does still have a lot of influence. I mean, we can discuss how successful The Ringer is or not, but he has it running at a place where it gets a reasonable amount of attention. His podcast in particular still gets a lot of attention. His columns there get a fair bit of attention. And I think it's this HBO deal is interesting in that it shows that they still clearly have a lot of interest in him and think that he is worth spending money on and that's interesting to me too, in that I feel like that's a move based on what they actually think he can contribute. It's not a just let's keep him away from everyone else move, because I don't think there are as many suitors for Bill Simmons as there once were. So I feel like they made this move being like, okay, we saw what he did with Andre the Giant. We think that is a valuable guy to have in-house, especially now that everybody is trying to do these sports documentaries. Having ours with the Bill Simmons connection maybe elevates them a little more. And I mean, I think they clearly see some value in him still, and I think it makes sense for them to see some value.
Well, then let me go right back to you, Matt. If you're looking at Simmons and saying maybe his stock is down, how would you look at him as a valuable asset for HBO? How would you use him most effectively?
I think it's pumping out more of these documentaries. I think, I don't know what kind of cross-promotion they can do with The Ringer. It was interesting, Andrew's point, because we had The Ringer publish this huge 100 best television shows of all time list, which, you know, I'm sure would make great podcast material. Great, I don't know if it's sports blog material, but at least conversation killers while we are in the dog days of summer. But I look at that and I wonder, gosh, if that was the Grantland platform, the ESPN platform, how much more juice could you get out of something like that? And to me, that's the weird part of where HBO and Simmons are right now, because beyond the documentaries, what else is there for him besides taking another crack at a weekly show? And I don't think we're going to see that happen anytime soon. So I don't know if there really is a lot of potential to go beyond that at HBO right now.
What if he hosted a Hard Knocks postgame show?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of an interesting idea, because the one other thing that we sort of seen come from this was the After the Throne show they did on HBO, and then they eventually moved it over to Twitter. And it wasn't Simmons himself, but it was Rainer people.
Yeah.
And I think some sort of shoulder Hard Knocks programming would certainly be interesting. I think there are things that you can do with him along those lines, but I mean, like we were talking
real
about
sports, earlier. Like, is that an option? Could he call boxing, you know, fight? I don't know.
But I mean, I think something that's worth keeping in mind here too, though, is, I mean, we've talked about how in a lot of ways Simmons seems sort of better behind the camera versus out in front of it, and coming up with these ideas and helping to refine these ideas and versus being the host or whatever. And I think something else that's interesting here is that it's sort of HBO is getting a look at sort of whatever he comes up with. And if it doesn't work out for them, fine. They've got options that he can bring it elsewhere. But I think a lot of it is them being sort of like, okay, here, we'll give you some money. We'll see what you do. Maybe there are some things that are fits for us. And if so, we'll pick them up. But I think it makes some sense for them just from that perspective of, hey, maybe this guy will knock it out of the park. Maybe he'll come up with some insanely creative concept that we can actually feature on HBO or one of our digital platforms or whatever. And in some ways, it's sort of a speculative bet of let's take a look at whatever Bill's going to do.
I'm just now thinking about what Matt just said about the idea of Bill Simmons going in and hosting Real Sports. And like, if you ever wanted to envision a modern day Anchorman scenario, like Brian Gumbel is Ron Burgundy, you have Simmons come in as Veronica Corningstone, he shows up and all of a sudden Bernard Goldberg is like, you're not Brian Gumbel. And then this whole that somebody would get killed with a trident, and I think you would have unbelievable drama ensue. Just throwing it out there.
While we're on that front, I do have to say, I think Anchorman 2 is one of the more underrated sequels out there.
Really? This is going to blow your mind. I've never seen Anchorman 2.
I think it's exactly like it's what you'd expect from an Anchorman follow-up on one level, but it also has a whole lot of points to make about like CNN and ESPN and national cable news and our media cycle. And so anyway, I think it's a movie that doesn't.
I think maybe what's holding me back is my biggest fear of it being very similar to the Dumb and Dumber sequel, which really was a sad moment in my life.
Are you referring to Dumb and Dumber 2 or Dumb and Dumberer?
I think all of the above.
I'd have to watch it one more time, Andrew, to potentially get on your level. I watched it and left immensely disappointed, but now that I'm thinking about it from the idea of a media critic, who knows, maybe you know what, the first time I watched the original Anchorman, I didn't like it. So maybe if I come back to Anchorman 2, I might have a new appreciation for it. You never know.
I do think the thing that's interesting there too is Adam McKay has a fascinating history as a director. Like, he's done all this Will Ferrell stuff from, like, Anchorman, yeah, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, and whatever. But then he also did, I can't think of the name of it, but he did the Wall Street movie based on the Michael Lewis book that was really good and really, really outstanding and just, like, a very serious topic. So, anyway, I think he's a very interesting director and a guy who has quite a few things to say.
The Big Short is the movie that you are referring to, which was terrific. I was about to say The Wolf of Wall Street, and I said, no, that wasn't him at all. I'm actually glad that you brought up Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, believe it or not, because it actually leads perfectly into our final question of the night. And it transitions well because we were talking about ESPN as well and mentioned Jim Miller earlier in the podcast. And this is the idea that James Franco, of all people, there are rumors and reports that he wants to direct a movie about Jim Miller's ESPN book, These Guys Have All the Fun. And I'm wondering if you guys, A, think the premise would work, and B, if so, do you have any idea of potential people you can cast to play any of the roles?
Yikes. See, to me, I think we've tossed around the idea of how do you make this giant history of ESPN into a movie. And to me, the most interesting question is, what era do you focus on? Do you focus on the very beginning? Do you focus on kind of the behind-the-scenes rise of SportsCenter and some of the more the salacious details in the book about the early goings-on there? I don't know. Those are great questions, Ben, and I just think there's so much there. To me, the biggest question and kind of the underlying premise is what era and what part of ESPN's history do you focus on? Because it is such a big story and a big tale. I mean, you could put Ken Burns behind it and make, a 32-part documentary about it. But I don't know. I'd be curious if Andrew had any big casting ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about casting ideas, but I'm not very sold on this as a movie. I think Those Guys have All the Fun is a fantastic book, and it's a book that everyone should read. But I'm not sure how well it translates into a movie in that so much of it is so well known at this point, really. And also, like, it's not ancient history. It's 30, 40 years ago. And so I think that if they do make this, I think the part of the founding of ESPN to me is really the most interesting part, and the part that's like potentially marketable to people beyond us sports media nerds, because there's a good, interesting story there. But at the same time, it's a story that's very well known by this point, very established, and I don't know if you convince anyone else to really get interested from a James Franco movie.
What if they did it sort of as like a Christopher Guest, The Office style mockumentary, where you and then you had like these interviews throughout the way, and I feel like that would be a really interesting, it sort of feel like it would be one long This Is SportsCenter commercial.
Rainn Wilson as early 80s Chris Berman and John Krasinski as early 80s Bob Lee.
I can see that.
Although I was actually thinking maybe Zach Galifianakis as Chris Berman.
We'll have to make this for our next roundtable, is trying to determine the cast members, or maybe that's a post for awfulannouncing.com, as you know, this is the cast, and I'll try and tweet you guys some possible ideas. But anyway, something to think about for not only us, but for you guys listening as well. Andrew Buchholz, Matt Yoder, thank you guys for joining us. You can read their work over at awfulannouncing.com. Thanks so much to our sponsor, Clipit, the number one way to share your favorite shows and clips with your family and friends. Download the Clipit app today for Android and iOS. For Matt, for Andrew, this is Ben. We will talk to you guys again soon on the next Awful Announcing podcast.